Blog Talk Radio.
We're going live. I'm going to play a clip of a Bernie Sanders interview, and then we'll play New Way in a little while. Here we go.
Threat and contender. Senator Sanders, thanks so much for being here. Nice to have you.
Nice to be with you, Kim.
So listen, it's especially nice to have you on a day where you're getting some very positive press from places like the Washington Post and the New York Times. They're saying you're having a moment. The New York Times says challenging Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders gains momentum in Iowa. The Washington Post said it's not just Hillary. Senator Bernie Sanders is outdrawing Martin O'Malley. The Washington Post describes it as Bernie momentum. So are you feeling the big mo? I mean, why do you think your candidacy is resonating?
Well, let me tell you, it's been a heck of a week. We formally announced in my hometown of Burlington, Vermont, on a beautiful evening, over 5,000 people came out. That was very gratifying. Then we went to New Hampshire. We had only standing room crowds. We had over 700 people in Portsmouth. Then we went to Iowa, and it really became crazy. I mean, just huge crowds. And we ended up Sunday morning in Minneapolis. 4,000 people came out. And I think the reason for that is that people are just having enough with the status quo from an economic perspective and a political perspective. They see the rich getting much richer and everybody else hurting, and they want people to start standing up for the middle class.
You were polling at 8%, I think, in April, and now you're up to 15%, which is pretty, you know, a big jump. And I think a lot of people are pretty surprised about it.
Well, they may be. I'm not. Because people understand, Katie, that there is something fundamentally wrong when for the last 40 years, the middle class of this country has been disappearing. We've got millions of people out there who are working longer hours for lower wages. In my state of Vermont, honestly, it is not uncommon for people to be working two or three jobs to cobble together an income and some health care. Young people can't afford to go to college anymore. We're not dealing with the issue of a corrupt campaign finance system. We're in the moment now. You want to run for president of the United States? Well, you better get some billionaires behind you. And if you don't have billionaires, it's pretty hard to run.
We're going
to
talk about all those things, campaign finance reform and other matters. But a lot of people didn't take your candidacy seriously initially when you announced. And witness this piece of business on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, and then we'll talk about it.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders kicked off his campaign for president.
He's a long shot.
A long shot.
I don't think he's going to be taken too credibly.
Bernie Sanders is a socialist, for God's sake.
A thick Brooklyn accent. He's 73 years old. He looks 91.
Is there a little crusty?
He's a loon, isn't he?
He owns a VHS copy of Tootsie.
Had you seen that from The Daily Show?
No.
Are you feeling a little vindicated, though, knowing that people were in a way mocking your candidacy initially?
I don't want to hurt, you know, the punditry, but sometimes, especially the inside the Beltway pundits, really don't know what's going on in the rest of the world. I've been going around the country, and we talk to a whole lot of people, and there's a lot more frustration and anger than the inside the Beltway people perceive.
Let's talk about some of the issues. The Patriot Act, the provision in the Patriot Act that allows the NSA to collect phone records and view the data, as you well know, was allowed to expire last night. You and Rand Paul seem to be on the same page when it comes to letting this expire. Why?
Well, in many respects, we are. I voted for to allow the debate to continue. But here's where we're at, Katie. This is a huge issue which we don't discuss enough. And it's not just the Patriot Act, which, among other things, will collect and file every phone call that you make. We also think there's reason to believe that occasionally they're getting into people's emails, getting into people's websites. Everybody agrees that our government has got to do everything that it can to protect the American people from a very, very serious threat of terrorism. That's a real threat. Question is, can we do it in a way that does not undermine the constitutional rights of the free people and our privacy rights? And I believe that we can. So I voted against the Patriot Act, I voted against the reauthorization of the Patriot Act, and I will vote against final passage for the current legislation because I think it does not go far enough.
The USA Freedom Act?
Yeah, I'll vote against that.
So why?
Because it doesn't go far enough in protecting our privacy rights. Now, the good news is it takes the phone records out of the NSA.
And gives it back to the phone companies,
yes,
right?
Correct. And that's a good thing. But the bad thing is there are still too many information on innocent people.
Too easy for the government to obtain those records?
Yes.
So what safeguards do you think should be in place for you to support this kind of legislation?
Look, I think everybody agrees that if the government or law enforcement has reason to believe that somebody may be involved in terrorist activity, we want all the investigation that we possibly can, obviously. But what we don't want is the government investigating or compiling records on people who really have nothing to do with terrorism. So in other words, if the government goes into what we call the FISA court and says, look, we think Katie Couric is involved, she's been doing this, she's been doing that, go after her. But if people are not involved and there's no evidence that they are, I don't want to see that information being collected.
But under this Freedom Act, doesn't the NSA or the government have to go to a FISA court and say, we need to obtain these records?
Yeah,
so
but
why
it's not just the phone records, Katie. That's the point. Yes,
mm-hmm.
You're right for the phone records, but it goes beyond that. There is other ways that the government can get information. And by the way, let me say this. This is not just the government. It is corporate America as well. What is very clear is technology has significantly outpaced public policy. Probably there is somebody who knows exactly where you are right at this moment. There's somebody who knows the food that you eat if you use a credit card when you go to the grocery store, the books that you purchase, the magazines that you buy. There is a huge amount of information being collected on our individual lives. We need to have a discussion about whether we're feeling good about that.
So what kind of legislation would you support that allows the government to keep track legitimately of potential terrorists?
If we have evidence that somebody is involved or might be involved in terrorist activity, let's go after them. But clearly, in terms of telephone records, 99.99% of the people whose records are being collected have nothing to do with terrorism.
So you don't think that you're going to make it too hard for the government to monitor these kinds of situations?
No. I honestly believe that we will give the government and law enforcement all of the resources that it needs to go after those people who we have to go after. But I worry, really worry, that we are moving toward an Orwellian form of society where Big Brother, whether in the corporate world or in the government, knows has too much information about the private lives of innocent people.
Have you talked to Rand Paul about this, since you guys seem to be so like-minded on this issue?
Briefly, not a whole lot, but we have, yeah.
Would you agree, though, that you're pretty much in lockstep?
I wouldn't say lockstep, but we both have the same concerns.
All right, we're going to talk about some other issues, Senator, but first let me ask you about some broader issues about the campaign itself. Hillary Clinton is a clear front runner right now. Can you envision any scenario under which she would not get the Democratic nomination?
Well, I'm in this race. We're in this race to win. I think that there are millions and millions of people who are tired of establishment politics, who are tired of corporate greed, who want a candidate that will help lead a mass movement in this country of millions of people who essentially say what people are saying is enough is enough. The billionaire class cannot have it all.
So are you equating Hillary Clinton with establishment politics and corporate greed?
No, unless American people make that decision. I've known Hillary Clinton for 25 years, and I have a lot of respect for her. But what I am saying is that the American...
I'm going to pause the video now. I don't know why John hasn't called in. He has a night job, and he's often tied up. I'm going to talk a few minutes, then run the rest of the interview with Katie Couric on Yahoo News, and then I will find out what's going on. Tonight's topic does have to do with a riveting comment made in an Iowa hallway this week by Bernie Sanders. It also has to do with the dignity of Hillary Clinton and how her strength on women issues have maybe blindsided the Black Lives Leader management to thinking that she wasn't being forward-thinking towards Black civil rights. But they obviously haven't gone far enough back in time to see what her and her husband have done for Blacks in the state of Arkansas and also as president. Now, Bernie was in the hall and he said he will not address the media in a conflictual way about his running, the person he's running against, which is Hillary Clinton. The reason he said that is because they were trying to draw him into a conflict and he wants to stick with the issues. He's happy about talking about the issues. The second thing is he has a lot to say. He's not afraid to take the unpopular view, like you just heard in the Patriot Act that which was recently voted on in 2014. And many of the issues that he has talked about come from a place where he's representing general sentiments of the middle class and possibly the lower class. And just people are sick of establishment party politics, and even the same third generation or third person from another family like Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton, who's been around since the 80s with Bill, as far as, you know, national politics, but more so since early 90s. People just really don't know what to make of it. They want more of a celebratory democracy where people are engaged in fruitful dialogue and part of the system. But, for example, the Republican race has 17 people to choose from, and many of whom we don't know. And that's what makes it for lively debate. With that, I'm going to try to get a hold of John, and I'm going to play the rest of this Bernie Sanders interview.
People understand, when you have an economy where 99% of all low income goes to the top 1/10, 1%, and where the top 1/10 of 1% owns almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%, where one family, the Walton family, itself owns more wealth than the bottom 130 million Americans, that is not an economy that America is supposed to have. That's not what we are about. And people want change. They want the wealthy and the powerful to start paying their fair share of taxes, among many other things.
So are you saying that Hillary Clinton is not, ergo, the candidate of change, Senator?
What I don't want to do, Katie, is people will make their own judgments about Hillary Clinton.
But you're running against her, so can you differentiate
why
you're the right candidate and she's not?
Yes, because for 30 years, as mayor of the city of Burlington, as a member of Congress, as a member of the Senate, I have stood up for the most powerful people, the most powerful special interest in this country. I took on Wall Street, and I am fighting to see that we break up the large financial institutions. I took on the insurance companies. I've taken on the drug companies. I've taken on the military-industrial complex. I am fighting to make sure that every kid in this country, regardless of his or her income, can afford to go to college.
I know that you've said that banks that are too big to fail should not exist.
Exactly.
Do you think that Hillary Clinton is too cozy with Wall Street? In other words, do you disagree with her on that particular point?
I think, which I don't know how much she has spoken out of it. What I believe is that given the greed and recklessness and illegal behavior on Wall Street, where you have six financial institutions that have assets that are the equivalent of 60% of the gross domestic product of this country, who have caused the worst recession in the modern history of this country. Many of these banks are bigger today than they were before we bailed them out. Enough is enough. Yes, we should break them up. I'm not quite clear what Hillary Clinton's position is on that issue.
You've also harshly criticized super PACs. Hillary Clinton's campaign has said that they hope to raise $2 billion, billion with a B, that way. Now, for some people who are watching, Senator, and may not be familiar with super PACs, why don't you explain what they are and why you find them so sinister?
Katie, as a result of the disastrous Supreme Court decision on Citizens United, what the Supreme Court essentially said to the wealthiest people in this country, you own much of the economy. Now we're going to let you buy the United States government. That's what they said. They said campaign contributions are a form of freedom of speech. Now you can use your freedom to buy the United States government. You can spend as much money as you want on the political process. Now, previous to that, we had legislation that said you want to make a campaign contribution, there's a limit, roughly $5,400 that you can give to a candidate, $2,500 before, $2,500 after the primary. Now, if you want to put millions of dollars, when Jeb Bush is going around the country, there are people who are putting millions of dollars into a super PAC, and that super PAC, theoretically independent of the candidacy, can then spend as much money as it wants.
On issue-oriented
things. Yeah, quote-unquote issue-oriented, yes. They can write, do these vicious personal attacks. So it is a campaign finance system where the Koch brothers themselves, second wealthiest family in this country, will spend close to $1 billion this election cycle, which is more money, Katie, than either the Democratic Party or the Republican Party will spend. One family. Does that sound sound like democracy to you?
You're refusing to use super PACs, as I mentioned. Your average campaign donor, I guess, is paying an average of $42 per donor. You want to raise $50 million. But with all due respect, Senator, how do you compete when Senator Clinton is saying, we're going to raise $2 billion?
Katie, that is an excellent.
I'm stopping the interview briefly. John Yoder is on the air, and I will pull him in. Hi, John. That was an interview with Katie Couric and Bernie Sanders.
Wow, Bernie's stepping up to the plate.
He's gone from 8% to 15% in the polls, and in some cases I've heard of 30%. One other people like John Stewart was joking, he's 73, but he looks 91. Another comedian held up a copy of a VHS and says he has a VH copy of Tootsie. They were joking about his age and his potential popularity.
Wow.
Do you think someone like him can win from the Northeast Coast? He said that 5,000 people were there alone when he announced his candidacy. So that's pretty impressive. And that was in a northern state, Vermont.
Yeah, I mean, it's rare. It's possible. But I think it would, the problem will be when you start getting to the popular kind of vote. I think in local and small situations, he can pull off some upsets. But I think in the long term, I still think from the beginning it'll be Hillary, pretty much.
Yeah, just so you know, he's the longest serving senator that is part of an independent party. He is running on the Democratic side now, but he is non-party affiliated, and he began his career in 1971 as a member of the Liberty Union Party, which originated in the anti-war and People's Party movement, which was probably similar to, like, Larry Elder's thing, except for it was probably independent of government in the sense of not going to war and stuff, libertarian, only for different causes. So he ran the Liberty Union candidacy as governor from 72 to 76, and as a candidate for senator in 72 and 74. In the 74 race, he finished third. I'm trying to see. I don't know what year he made it as senator. Maybe it'll tell me on the right side. He is a Jew, too, from Brooklyn, New York.
Really?
Yeah, it would be like the first Jew to ever be president. So he assumed office January 3rd, 2007. So he's been a senator for 8 years. So he was a U.S. House of Representatives, and a senator. Go ahead.
Would you vote for him? Does he have your vote?
Yes. I wouldn't do it over Hillary, but I might vote for him in the primary just to see how it's going to turn out. I voted for Jesse Jackson when somebody else was running in 88. I mean, I don't always vote for the mainstream candidate in the primary.
I see. And what are the two or three things you like the most about him?
He's completely honest. He doesn't have any loyalties, like he was saying on the interview, to PAC groups. He's raising his own money. And then he was talking earlier before he got on about he didn't vote in favor of renewing the Patriot Act. He thinks that this is what he's scared of. He's scared of the government having too much control in our lives. Just the way things are set up now with the lopsided, billionaires running the show and the lack of democracy, with the Koch brothers, which people have been complaining about for years. But I guess my biggest appeal is his campaign speech styles. And he's on target on a lot of issues, and he also refused to answer the media the other day when they were trying to corral him into criticizing Hillary Clinton. He said, I've known Hillary 25 years. I like and respect her, and I will address her on the issues in debate, but I won't railroad her on the side.
Wow.
And now the joke about him now is feel the burn. That's one of the new campaign slogans.
That is
feel
pretty
the
cute.
Burn.
Nice.
So what's, I don't want to just talk about party politics. What I was going to tell you on NPR today, Hillary Clinton, guess what group she got attacked by?
It couldn't be the subway people. The Subway
Black
sandwich.
Black Lives Matter. They said she wasn't black enough, I guess. And I wanted to read one thing about her life before we get into that topic. In 1962... go ahead.
Wasn't she married to the first black president?
Yes. Who I believe had a few black lovers.
Woo!
But anyways, in 1962, her youth minister at her church in Illinois, he took Hillary and her class to hear a speech by Martin Luther King Jr. The civil rights pioneer preached a sermon called Sleeping Through the Revolution, and that really impacted her life. I'm not going to get into all the details, but she said it was a night she never forgot. And then later on, her girlfriend named Betsy or something brought her to another speech, and she got to shake hands and meet him. She got
really?
To meet and shake MLK's hand, and she said her, like many other Americans, didn't really know how rough the black people had it, like in places like Chicago in the South, you know, South Chicago.
Right.
So, and then a lot of other stuff she's done was women's rights, you know, like the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act and all that. Well, let me just read this other segment. Betsy, Hillary's high school friend and her grandfather, took Hillary to hear Dr. Martin Luther King speak at Chicago Sunday Evening Club. King talked about racial segregation in the North and South. It was the first time Hillary, then 14, grasped the notion of Negro children being the poorest and most vulnerable. If there is a single developmental thread of Hillary's political, religious, and social development, it is her belief and determination that the tragedy of race in America must be made right. What in part first attracted her to Bill was her perception that he was an unusual, enlightened Southerner who wanted to go into politics and help right the country's greatest wrong, which is racism. Hillary formed many of her closest friendships with blacks. Her mentor, Marion Wright Edelman, founder of the Children's Defense Fund, was one of them. Later in the White House, Hillary chose several African Americans as senior aides. So this is from a couple of them are quotes from a book, God and Hillary Clinton, by Paul Kengor. One was A Woman in Charge by Carol Bernstein, written in 07. And the website is www.ontheissues.org. So it's a nonprofit that I'm quoting from. So do you want to hear one more clip from Bernie?
Hey, go for it. Let it roll.
Okay, here we go. Yeah, here we go.
And we're just going to do the best we can. But what you're really saying, this is not just Bernie Sanders, what you are really saying, as I hear it, can any candidate who is not tied in with the billionaires, who is trying to represent working families, who is trying to deal with the tough issues facing our country, can they run for office anymore? And if what you're saying is true, and it may well be true, it frankly, let me be honest with you, it may in fact be too late. The billionaires may be too powerful, and maybe the only candidates who can win get money from the billionaires, and are beholden to the billionaires. And if that's the case, you can form your judgment. But it doesn't sound to me like the democracy that men and women fought and died to defend.
You want to get big money out of politics, so how do you do it? How do you change the system?
Okay, good question. Excellent question. And boy, do we need a big national debate on this. All right, number one, first thing you do is overturn this disastrous Citizens United Supreme Court
decision. You want a constitutional amendment.
Absolutely. It passed by a 5-4 vote. And it is, in my view, resulting in the undermining of American democracy. Number two, temporarily, what we can do is pass a Disclosure Act. And what that means is if somebody wants to spend a whole lot of money on ugly 30-second ads, you're going to have their pretty picture up there on that ad saying, I approve that ad. You know, maybe the Koch brothers do not want their pretty picture up there because they have to sell their products. Third thing we have to do is move to a public funding of elections. And that means that anybody in this country, if you're conservative, if you're progressive, can run for office, be on a level playing field, and not have to be dependent on a big money interest or spend half your life trying to raise money.
Do you think there's a national will to have public funding?
I do. I do. Now, I know my Republican friends will talk about, you know, this is welfare for politicians, public money for politicians. Yet the alternative is what we are seeing right now is a Republican Party and too many Democrats who are receiving huge amounts of money from big money interests end up representing those people rather than the middle class.
I want to read a quote by Hillary Clinton. She said, we need to fix our dysfunctional political system and get unaccountable money out of it once and for all, even if it takes a constitutional amendment. Do you find that hypocritical?
John, one thing that would be a distraction is his gargly voice.
Yes, among other things. People like sexy nowadays.
By the way, we have a caller. I'll just give a brief introduction. We've been talking about Bernie Sanders and standing up to the media this week, saying that he will refuse to attack Hillary Clinton, somebody he's running against, that he just wants to stick to the issues. And he has gotten a lot of good exposure on several news outlets, and also kudos from the Washington Post and the New York Times, which has increased his candidacy and hopes. So I'll see if this caller wants to talk. This is Jane from Blog Talk Radio, Political Gravity. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, this is Jim.
Hi, Jim. Are you here to listen tonight, or would you like to participate?
Well, I just had a small little comment to give.
Sure. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to, I don't know if you guys heard about this. Obviously, he's not going to be anything. He's a very small thing out in Illinois of this hopeful candidate named Seth.
No, I don't know of him, but the thing is I do watch some alternative media. Is it one of your friends or something?
No, it's not one of my friends.
Well, you never know. I mean, we get a lot of late night callers. I'm not really sure. Who is he and what's his last name?
His last name's Rollins, Seth Rollins. He's from Illinois. No, not Iowa. I'm sorry, Iowa.
Seth Round. I'll look him up while you're talking.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, he's just...
Has he been going on foot to the Iowa, you know, to places in Iowa to get votes?
He's been all around the United States, and...
Yes, we're listening. Okay, well, should we try to pay attention to him? He hung up, John.
Well, it sounds like at least he caught this listener's attention. I would have to say in the country there's got to be more than one or two people capable of running it. You know, when you think about it, like in sports or any other thing, sometimes they'll say this person's the best person in the world. Well, maybe, or maybe it's just among the people that we're watching that are popular, they may be the best, but it's not like, you know, that one person has competed against 250 million athletes. They've competed against 10 or 20 or a couple hundred, or they've placed it well within a certain grouping. So the question is, I mean, do we have the best people running for office? Maybe. Maybe not.
I think we have some of the best, but let's face it, what Bernie Sanders is talking about, public funding for candidates, that's going to, you know, with a, we have a Republican-based House and a Republican-based Senate right now. You know, let's just face it, with the type of exposure that people need to run for office, there's 459 people running, and we've only heard of about 17 or 18 on the Republican side and 3 on the Democrat side. In fact, I can't even remember if Lincoln Chafee, there's O'Malley, Clinton, Sanders, and Chafee on the Democrat side, and I think there might be one more. So, like, how many can we really focus on? And then the mainstream media spends, like we said on the last three shows, they spend so much time on Donald Trump. I mean, a lot of people are getting gypped for airtime.
Oh, sure. And let's put it in another way. If you're going to be a doctor, you would go to school and you'd pass many tests. You'd study the subject repeatedly. Same thing if you're going to be a lawyer and so forth. What test do you take to be a politician? When you think about it, is there a specific class or study? You know, a lot of it is just networking and getting the right political and money people behind you and aligning that. And so that's a skill and an art within itself. But the point is, it's not a specific, like I went to politician school and I was the best person that tested out of 1,000 people. No, you could be Joe the Bum, and if you can get a party to rally around you and follow you, you're a politician. So it's kind of a different game.
Well, the other thing is that, you know, the other thing is that, look, Jesse Ventura won he was a boa feather wrestler. He won the Minnesota governorship. Arnold wasn't even born in America, and he won the California governorship. For president, you need someone a little more solid, but look at Obama. He was attacked for his birthing status for years and years until it became so annoying that it just finally went away. So, you know, I mean, anyone can run, but you can't be a criminal, and you're not going to be taken seriously if you don't have some stature in the world.
Right. I think the key word is financial stature in the world. It's rarely you're going to see a poor bum kind of person or a Jesus type of figure gain momentum. You have to have finance, or you have to have the blessing of people with money. And the Kennedys illustrated that. And there's other families that are that display that, but you know, that's the popular, well, like just as in the case of the Koch brothers, I mean, you know, someone out there wants their vote, and someone out there wants to get the vote of big business, big money, and that's who's going to get into office. These groups are going to make sure, whether it's unions or whether it's chemical companies, whether it's drug companies, they're going to want to make sure that they find someone among the pool of runners that is favorable towards them, that will reach out to them and represent them. So that's not going to go away. And you may have a person that's small time, that's gaining power. As they go up among the ranks, that person's going to be a target. How many times have you seen a candidate have a lot of momentum, and then when it gets time to really step up and get the American vote, something will come out, a scandal or something, some secret revealed that had been there for years, because people with money start digging around. Or they, you know how this sting operation kind of happens, is a guy is a party favorite. And he's in town, and he goes to a hotel, and some really beautiful hot chick sleeps with him. And bing, bang, boom, the next morning there's pictures, or there's a leaked story, and that person is trashed. Or they're threatened not to run any further. You remember that the last election, how the one gentleman He was a brother man, and he had a lot of momentum. People loved him, but then it was going to get leaked out that he either had an affair or something like that, and he didn't want to blow up his marriage publicly, right? And so
let's go beyond the I just found a poster while I was looking for a picture of Bernie's wife. She's actually a younger looking woman, maybe in her 50s, who is a college professor at Burlington. But here's where Bernie stands. I'll go back to what you said in a minute. End the war on drugs, affordable free college education, federalize gay marriage, climate change solutions, and take on income inequality. Now, even the Black Lives Matter people attacked him, too. They charged his podium in one place. I think it was in Oregon or Washington. So, I mean, I guess some Republicans would say that Bernie wants a utopia as far as affordable and free college education. Did you know up here in Minnesota, like, some of the colleges charge $25,000 a year? I mean, what kind of parents can come up with that money? And then they still have to apply for subsidies on the side or grants and scholarships. So, I mean, I think what he said in the beginning of the Couric interview is he's for the working man. Now, one thing that you touched upon is that, you know, I don't think the Koch brothers have as much power as people think. There's at least 50% of the population is aware of who they are, and when they find out who they back, it's a turnoff for a lot of people. So people aren't completely blindsided, and not everybody just wins a race because they have the most ads on TV. So I do give the American people some credit, don't you?
No, I don't think so. Obama didn't start with money, but he sure ended with it. When he went to election, he had, I think, over $500 million in the war chest, if you want to call it. And his competition had $250 million, something like that. It was definitely less than half.
Like Mitt Romney had less?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it was a lot of money being pumped to promote Obama, and he appealed to that, you know, the whole party. And you even look at it now. He's been to California, seems like every 3 months or so. I could be wrong. But the point is, why is he out here? Fundraisers. Hanging out with, you know, Bill Clinton and everyone else, and meeting all the Hollywood celebrities and hobnobbing with them. And just why they do, you know, why does he need money for it? It's like party favors. It's like you got to keep the party line going. That's how we got here. So everyone understands that process.
One thing that, see, in the beginning, you know, like we're 14 months away from voting, maybe 14 and a half. I don't come across even myself as partisan politics. I'm not going to pick a candidate 14 months before the election, even if I like Hillary Clinton. Now, the thing is that Bernie Sanders is legitimate, too, and I doubt that he'll get endorsed by the DFL or the Democrats. DFL is a Minnesota one, but he's probably not going to get endorsed over Hillary. But the thing is people have to look at trends, and one of the first candidates to open up said, we're not, I think it was O'Malley, he said, people are tired of throwing the mantle between two different families, the Bushes and the Clinton. You know, we want real democracy here. And it's not going to take place if it's just focused on the top few, including Donald Trump, who just this week put out a formal policy statement on immigration. So people are tired of the fluff. Are you, John?
Actually, I think that's idealistic. I think that, yeah, a person like you is very, wants a very pure kind of process, and will try to vote for who they feel conscientiously is the best candidate. or someone that kind of approaches that ideal of your ethics. But most people aren't like that. Most people are going to vote Republican because they always vote Republican, or Democrat because they've always voted Democrat. You're going to have these kind of 10 to 20% fringe, undecided, independent, liberal, or gay, or, you know, there's all kinds of different demographics that fit into that. But the point is, it's open season for a particular few, that 5 or 10% that will swing the vote. It's the swing vote. So
in
I think
some states, by the time the general election rolls around for the two remaining ones, they have to either register Republican or Democrat, so they need to know at least a month before they're voting, so when they show up for the polls, their name is on the registration. Now,
sure.
Some states do require that you register as a particular party. Otherwise, you can't. They're going to give you a ballot, and it's not going to have your candidates on there that you want.
Well, even let's take the example of our brother man, Barry Obama. Where did he come from? He came from Illinois, you know, and what city really was backing him? Chicago. And what do we know about Chicago? Well, let's think. Tell me, Johnny, what have they won? Well, historically, it's a mob town, right? A gangster town. That's where JFK got a lot of his votes, right? That's what helped launch.
There's a few things you're forgetting, though, that he already went through some dogged out races in Illinois. He lost the first time to a well known person when he ran for Senate, and he had to work his way up through the system. He wasn't a native to that state. He got his master's at Columbia, I believe, and he got his law degree. Maybe it was his law degree. Let me just see. Who did we have another caller, John? But
yeah.
Before I bring the caller in, I'm gonna look up. Who did he lose to in Chicago? And I should have known this from the last time, because Bill Clinton had this old black friend in Illinois. And he was preceded. It could have been Roland Burris. But anyways, Clinton had a longtime friend in Illinois, and Obama went up against him and he lost. Now, Obama was a state senator from 1997 to 2004, so that was 7 years. And then he was a U.S. senator from 2005 to 2008, so that was 3 years. But I know there was a couple races that he lost.
I'm not yet. And my point being is that he had to go through that process of winning through there. He didn't go to Alaska. He didn't go to New Mexico. You know what I'm saying? He that was whoever was going to come out of a place like Chicago or like California or New York or East Coast, it's, you know, there's always going to be the side of money that they have to attract, or the unions, or get some kind of momentum. And he happened to be the perfect poster child of what they were looking for. But it was more the party process, not him, that really made it, if that makes any sense.
Right. Let me just throw this in here. He got his BA from Columbia and his Juris Doctor from Harvard. He served 3 terms in the Illinois Senate, but he ran unsuccessfully for the U.S. House of Representatives in 2000 because there was a popular guy in office who Clinton backed and several others, and he didn't win. He faced defeat once in his life. Now, when he ran for Senate in 2004, and he gave that famous speech at the 2004 convention, that's when his national popularity began soaring. But I do notice that you always go to Barack Obama as an example. It seems like, I'm not trying to be rude, but you like to pick on him.
I love to pick on him. I mean, and think about it. when he did run for presidential office, he wasn't the front runner. I mean, he was back in the pack. You know, there was Hillary, and there's other people with money and power, and he shot right ahead of him. But the point is, in that process, he had to appeal to money. He had to get the support of the party, and it was there's a certain point where, you know, suddenly he had Oprah's endorsement, and suddenly he became the great black hope here. They're like, we could get a brother man. It suddenly didn't matter too much as long as he didn't screw it up. We just want to get a brother man in there. I mean, I know a Slick, my musical brother, voted for him just because he was black or half black. It was just, you know, even though his politics were counter to what Slick believed. And afterwards, he regretted it.
The thing is, John, is that he also got Carolyn Kennedy's endorsement, and he also had a good ground game. I don't think you knew this, maybe, but his ground game in Iowa and some of those early states was beyond excellent. He had really thousands of volunteers. Now, let's see what our caller has to say tonight. Good evening, the 765. Do you want to make a comment tonight? Okay.
Yeah, my comment was just basically, what will be different this time when Hillary could not beat Barack? Is there somebody out there?
I see what you're saying.
Is there somebody out there who could come up and dethrone her? Because we never thought that we would see, you know, Barack Obama come up, and that we kind of had the same conversation many years back, and it was, well, it's going to be Hillary versus Giuliani. Why do we believe
I guess
Hillary
my point is that
nominee this time?
Hillary is not Barack Obama. However, without being prophetic, he was the dark horse that overcame the her establishment. However, I think Americans do like security in the sense that they recognize Hillary, but as we were talking about earlier on the show with several media clips from Bernie Sanders in an interview with Katie Couric, is that people still want dynamic change. They don't want to just go with the safe person, just like they're not going to automatically go for Jeb Bush. They're going to consider people like Bobby Jindal and Ted Cruz and Mike Huckabee, so I think
Hillary was a safe candidate back then, but Democrats chose Barack. So
I think they didn't have a choice after he had gained so much momentum in all those other states during the primaries, and he also brought together a stronger coalition.
No, it was a humongous fight between him and her. And
I know, and she got a large share of the, I think her vote total in all primary states, I'll have to look that up, but it was, she got well over, I think it's something like 248 million votes overall in the primary in that particular year that she ran.
Right.
Which was 08.
But she still could not beat him. And when she could not beat him, he was essentially an unknown senator from Illinois. So
right. Well, it's kind of to partly answer your question. A couple things. One is Barack was spectacular. He appealed. He had a message of hope and change. It was so different. It was like, you know, we haven't had this before. It's like we could have a brother man in the office. He didn't come from money in the beginning. I mean, you know, he was a single white mom raising him, and he got a lot of scholarships and help that way. So it wasn't some rich family, some dynasty. And it was very romantic. It was very sexy. You know, we loved it. Just as a speaking figure and just by appearance, you know, he was very attractive. Now, the thing with Hillary is this time around, she's going to appeal to the female vote. She's also going to appeal to the gay vote. You know, 8 years ago, transgender and gay rights was a different, had a different tipping point. Before, you could be very conservative and get the vote. And now you have to have the gay, you have to sympathize with gays to get the vote. And if not, you're going to get tarred and feathered and kicked out of town. So that dynamic has changed also. So I see those as a couple of things. You're right. I don't know if when it comes down to the challenge and the push and the fight, will Hillary step up and really take charge? I think she will. I think she was too bland of a candidate the first time through, and it really hurt her. She listened to a lot of people, and this time around, she has you know, one-liners. She's more dramatic. She kind of knows the process, so I think that'll help her a few points there.
Well, so my thought is, where is the next Barack Obama? What? I think Democrats have plenty of other people who can come out and be the next Barack Obama. So,
well, she's
the next candidate. Trust me, there are plenty of other Barack Obamas in the Democrat Party who is going to come up out of nowhere and take it.
You know, that's a good point. The only problem I see is that...
You're talking about maybe Cory Booker, who just went from being in the New Jersey mayor to a senator, but
it's not going to happen
in this election cycle.
Well, here's the other problem with that. It's like the first man on the moon. How many people know about the fourth or fifth man that landed on the moon? We stopped caring. There was this idea, well, if we get a minority, you know, president for the first time, it's really going to change, right? Everyone got hyped, like hope and change. That was the deal. That was the whole idea. We finally have hope. We finally have change here. This is going to be totally different. And guess what? It wasn't different. It's still the same old, you know, thing. And so someone's not going to be able to, as a minority, come in and sweep it like that. Now, we haven't had a woman before. And we haven't had there's that kind of underground feeling that she's a lesbian, and that, or at least she's definitely into women, and that she's going to get that vote. So that is a different dynamic on her side. But you're right. I don't think the Republicans have a Barack Obama at all, and that's really going to hit them.
They don't need a Barack Obama.
Sir, what's your name, by the way, and where are you calling from?
Oh, my name's Thomas Everett from Indiana.
I have a question for you, but I'm going to pose it in a different way. Okay, I majored in political science for a master's, and I'm a world history teacher. So when I'm thinking about trend lines and ebbing and flowing and indigenous people rising up in their own land, like possibly a Native American, you know, person becoming popular, like a Leonard Peltier from the South Dakota Wounded Knee thing. I mean, from America, the way the media is presents candidates and gives people airtime, like they've given so much to Donald Trump, I do think there's a lot of capable unknowns or even, you know, qualified people, whether it's the neurosurgeon Ben Carson or even people who I found very talented on the stage for the Republican Party, like Bobby Jindal, whose parents are from India. I don't think creating another Barack Obama is one thing, but just creating a candidate who is solid, who might be a person of color or may not be, because even Ben Carson seems pretty traditional and mainstream. I think somebody, I overheard somebody say, like, with the way his styles of speeches were, Obama's, you're not going to create a sensation like that, but once every generation. So I don't know exactly where you're going with this, but that's my opinion, and I wanted to give you an update. Both Hillary and Obama got roughly 18 million votes in 2008, and there was only a 0.1% margin in the primaries between them. So you're pretty much right. It was a dogfight, and they were pretty much tied.
Yeah, well, I look at I look at people like Alan Keyes. Alan Keyes, when he ran as a Republican on the debate stage, it was a big deal to me, anyway.
Yeah,
it was a big deal.
Well, I, you know, as
and
a young, you're probably younger than John and I. I'm in my early 50s, and so is John. I mean, what is your vision for America beyond the candidate? What would you like to see?
Oh, well, just generic. It's debt reduction, something to deal with our debt. I mean,
right.
If we had a candidate.
Do you have a college degree, and did you pay a lot to get it?
I have a 2-year degree, and I joined the Army in 2005, and it paid for that degree. I've always kept up on politics. I was a state delegate in Texas and Indiana for the Republican
Party.
Okay,
is John or the our guest ruffling papers right now? So, are you still in the military? Are you still in the military?
No,
Tom?
No, not anymore.
So did you serve only 4 years?
I served 5 years.
Okay. So I guess the thing is that we have plenty of people we can pick from in the primary. Even Bernie Sanders, who's a 71-year-old Jew, is very appealing. He speaks the truth. He doesn't mince words. I mean, it doesn't have to be a Barack Obama is what I'm trying to say. The next person could be a middle-aged, it could be like a Claire McCaskill from Missouri.
I'd vote for Bernie Sanders, Oprah, I would, any Republican candidate. You know, I want somebody who's going to feel like
Obama. Make changes, right?
Yes, correct. Obama was a good figurehead, and he said he was going to do this and do that and things, but he did nothing. So I want somebody who's going to actually do something. Which is why I have an interest.
Well, Obama did pass comprehensive health care, and he also had gridlock in Congress for 7 years. So,
correct.
He passed the most comprehensive legislation since welfare reform in 1996. So
But I don't know exactly what that is doing right now. As far as health care, that's a whole other business. To me, we're dealing with insurers versus payers. You know, to me, it's the hospital.
Well,
are
you still on the VA? Okay. Well, listen, I pay $50 a month for mine. I'm a single parent. My son still gets county health insurance, even though I make $35,000 a year. So I'm pretty proud of myself for being able to pay for my own health care, but of course it's not very much money. A lot of people are paying $300 to $400 a month for their family.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I guess I'm not that disappointed in Obama overall. I'm disappointed in the system and how people don't work together and the harsh criticism that surfaces on every single topic. I'm also disappointed in how many people are dying in our streets, whether it's Black Lives Matter or just crazy people walking into a theater and it's a non-race-related killing. I mean, I just think there's a lot of upheaval in America socially. It doesn't just come from politicians.
Yes, correct. I mean, I feel like there is a disconnect between what you see this last debate that we saw on Fox News about whatever they were talking about. They were talking about Iran. They were talking about immigration. They were talking about whatever. But the majority of Americans, that doesn't matter in reality. What's going on in the RAND, where there's various factions of who's fighting who and who's doing what and who, it doesn't matter. There needs to be somebody that actually comes about and talks about, well, to me, it's about the debt, you know, and about the trillions of debt that we have accumulated and how we plan on paying that back and how we plan on, you know, just securing Social Security, securing Medicare, Medicaid, and whether it means just adjusting the retirement age. Well, it's very small things that could be done, I think, that could really change the way our debt is viewed in the world. But they don't want to do that.
I'm sure you have maybe one more degree of exposure than we do, because you probably served overseas and you saw people's perception of us. It is rather disappointing that we spend 30% of our national budget on the military, and now I'll let John talk too, but what is your feeling about Iraq? Like, the country's in turmoil again. The Kurds are fighting ISIS. There's not a lot of broad-based military support internationally, even by the Europeans. And the world in general is having a lot of problems. John, do you want to make a comment, since you're probably somewhere in Santa Monica or Marina del Rey?
Well, I think, you know, perception is an important thing. Like when we talk about Barack Obama, are we better off as far as financially? Our deficit has tripled. Think about this. We think, you know, Bush was incompetent. It's three times worse. They're just pumping money and printing it out like it's a candy store here, you know, like it's a game show thing. Hey, let's step right up, see what you want. You know, are we better morally? We become the transgender country, right? It's like, hey, you know, it's no longer a traditional moral kind of situation here. This is groundbreaking stuff. So when we start talking about Obama, has he, you know, changed the terrain here, the landscape? Yes, he has. Is it better? I don't think so. Are we a strong military force? No, we're not. Are we stronger as far as economically to compete against China and these other countries? No, we're not. We're about ready to have the dollar taken off as the international currency. So this is like amazingly a tipping point. Now, do we have a more popular president that's cool and groovy and looks great next to Beyonce and can wear a suit and chuck and jive with the best of them? Sure. He's cool. Barack Obama is extremely cool. But does that mean that he is morally or financially or, you know, from a homeland security point, a better president? I think not. I definitely think not.
I think all the security doesn't come boiled down just to the president. We are pretty active in drone strikes. We've been killing terrorists in Yemen and other places, but we haven't been able to control any civil wars. Yemen, Syria, and the Nineveh Plains Project that's trying to control Anbar region between Syria and Iraq. None of those areas are in control. So
We wanted to be a popular country. Go for it.
Oh no, if I can speak on that real quick. What is happening and has happened in Iraq is you know, back in 2009, we had the surge of troops going into Iraq, and we decided that we were going to take on the people who were killing Americans and killing our troops and fighting us, and we took them on, and we fought them, and we killed them. essentially. What is happening now in Iraq? Well, I say Iraq. It's Iraq slash Syria slash, you know, those areas, the northern, correct, Kurdish area. That was never settled. That was never settled, okay? And so what they're doing now is they're fighting it out. And we're gone. We're not there driving through the streets, which we were. We're not there patrolling. We're not there to keep the peace, okay? We're gone. And what's... And you
by
can
the
call,
way, I don't blame the U.S. for that. It's an internal problem, and it has to do with religion, too.
Well, you can say that, but what happened is that we went in there and we destabilized that entire region, right? That's what we kind of see right now with ISIS. ISIS is there because that entire region is destabilized. Okay?
There's right, it
there's
has
a
to
power
do with Syrian refugees.
A power vacuum.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I agree with you. I guess the fact of the matter is that I'm a Christian and John is too, and we believe in the end times. Now, the Muslims have a doctrine that they have to rise up in their own land and kill the infidels. And you're right, they're finding powerless people to dominate, but it started with the vacuum of the Syrian war that's gone on for 4 to 6 years now. And there's mm-hmm. refugees pouring into Turkey and other places mm-hmm. around Jordan. And many, even of the Christians who were persecuted in central Iraq, are now in Jordan and Lebanon. And there's so much shifts in population and lack of resources for fighting this, these crazy ISIS people who are destroying historical museum artifacts and other things. They just executed a famous professor the other day who was an antiquities professor. They just mm-hmm. executed him in cold blood. So a lot of this out-of-control stuff, America can't control it, and nor should we jump into every conflict and sink our money in to try to fix it. But
well,
people on the Republican side, pardon?
Isn't that too late? That's what we
it's
did.
It's too late
we
in one sense, but they're going to keep going. If a lot of Republicans think that we should send some faction or put some boots on the ground to fix the problem. John, what do you think?
We've always been involved, whether it's Korea, whether it's in the you know, the Cold War against Russia, against China. It's always been a part of politics, the dance of politics. And the point is, so now we got tired of being unpopular. We got tired of, you know, to the Bush years, Europeans not liking us, the French not liking us. So we got a guy in there that basically said, hey, I'm going to get you out of here, and we're going to be cool and groovy, and people are going to love us. Well, we're cool and groovy, but it's a chaos over there. It's a wild pit. And yeah, part of it is because we went in there and took out, Saddam Hussein. But still, the point is that mess was there already anyway. You know, whether it's North Korea or whether it's Iraq and Iran, there has always been hostile and unstable and crazy. And we've always had to be involved behind the scenes, you know, whether it's subliminally or not. And the point is, we can't just be cool and indifferent to it. We have to be involved in some
way.
By
the way, John, you have done a good job summarizing in that last segment that you just spoke. The thing is there are certain parts of the Middle East we can't ignore. For example, protection of Israel, our relationship with Saudi Arabia, in which the kingship now just transferred over in January. But you're right. A lot of it has been crazy. Yemen's been very stable for years upon end. 11 Middle East countries fell in the Arab Spring in 2011. There's only so much, in my opinion. I don't want any boots on the ground because I really don't think it's going to help in the long run for them to restructure their empires. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, but we've already done that. So what did we do then for the last X amount of years leading up to that? That's what we did. We had boots on the ground.
You're right.
We decided that we could actually go in there and be the police force of Iraq, and that we could determine, like I said, we're the boots on the ground. We're going to find out anybody who sets an IED. We're going to go out there and we're going to police the streets. Well, I mean, I'm not somebody to talk about it, but I was there. That's what we did. We drove through the street nonstop, and we made sure that there was nothing about to blow up and whatever. Doesn't matter what.
Do you think the people in Iraq, like places in Mosul or Erbil or the other places, do you think they felt intimidated by an American presence and their lives were more crippled, or did it help things?
No, of course they felt that. Of course. That's what we did.
Well, you know,
that we went through their towns and pointed guns at them. I was a gunner. And we were very nice. We were always very nice, and we'd say hello, and it was all... I worked in a prison. I worked in a prison for 15 months, okay? We treated them with dignity and respect, okay? I'm proud of what I did, okay? I had no idea...
Well, that's
idea
what we want to know. We're not challenging you. No,
I'm saying.
Yeah. I'm not challenging you, but... Yeah.
Yeah, no. I mean, we treated them with dignity and respect and things like that. And having seen that on the ground, it was kind of just a, it's kind of a weird thing that we had to deal with, that these people were coming in and, they may have come in for various reasons, and they were there because they supposedly set something or did not set something, and some of them spoke English and some did not speak English, and we don't understand.
We were there 10 years. It was a foreign occupation. What we did is we uprooted a president who had been in control for 24 years, who he wanted to establish regional hegemony in the region and create a Islamic-supported government, but with strong, he used extreme measures to keep his people in control. In the long run, it might take another 20 years to form a stable, not so much a democracy, but a non-Islamic controlled state, because Saddam Hussein was a Sunni, and now there's more Shias in control, and the ISIS people resent that, and it's probably going to be a battle right down to the end. I was going to comment, John.
You just nailed it. You nailed it completely.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened. Exactly.
I studied it for 5 years at Cal State Northridge. The thing is that with the Muslims, they can't get past themselves. They're still fighting over who the successor was of Muhammad, and the Sunnis and the Shias. The Sunnis were a minority. They had control out of the Tikrit region where Saddam Hussein came. But the Shias, there were over 600,000 Shias killed between the first Gulf War and the second Gulf War. And it's been an ongoing battle, and our nation alone cannot fix those problems or implant Western democracy without people they need to perceive that they can get along first as different sex of the month race.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because so many of the people that were in the prisons and you would talk about Sunni, Shia, you know, rifts, they did not quite understand what we were talking about. Okay. And we would talk, you know, we would kind of make the generic gestures, you know, Sunni, Shia, friends, things like that. Most of them had no idea, you know, what that was. I feel like that's something that we kind of fabricate, you know, that there was some major rift. There is.
Yeah, it goes
not
all the way back
not
to
the common people. Not to the commoners, not to the common people who may have been arrested for various reasons, or they don't see this. They don't see what's going on in Iraq as a Sunni Shia rift. It's kind of it's really about an American, you know, America versus them. You know, it's kind of, they do see it as an outside kind of, all these horrible things that we kind of hear about, they see that. It's an outside power that comes into their country and does whatever. And they kind of, you know, they don't understand this whole thing about Sunni Shia. And, you know, I'd have them in prison cells times 100 men. And you know, we'd talk
God.
About Sunni Shia and they would just be like, what? You know, and I would, you know,
is it kind of like America, where the lower class is just fighting for survival, and the middle and upper classes are like the religious clerics, but the lower are just fighting for survival, right?
Correct. Same way we kind of think of Democrats, Republicans. You know, they just don't. You know, they're Iraqis. They don't. You know, they're not going to necessarily step up and say that, we are with one faction, they're with one faction. They don't see it in those terms. We put those terms to them, but I don't think they actually see it in those terms.
John, and I just want to say we appreciate you calling in. John, what's your time frame tonight about, are you home yet?
No, actually, I'm closing up where I'm working at. But I will say first, we need to thank all our service personnel and for their commitment and for the sacrifice and the terror that they've had to deal with. I will say, though, we have to keep in mind, and don't look from a short-term perspective. Try to look as far back as you can. These groups have always fought and struggled for thousands, hundreds of years. They will continue to. And not only that, we have. We fought to get this country, you know, take it away from Britain and fought the Indians, and, you know, whether right or wrong. We did what we did. And just as Indians took it from wherever they got it from, which probably was no one. But the point is, that's the nature of life. There will always be conflict. You always have to fight and support it, you know, whether it's a civil war, whether it's war abroad. So, you know, realize, you know, don't get overwhelmed with it. It's like it was an unstable region. It always will be. We had the gift of being subliminal and behind the scenes for many years. And then Bush decided to take it very open and very public, you know, with his father. And Saddam also pushed that envelope. Suddenly, he's seizing the oil fields. What are you going to do? Let him take the oil fields and let them run the planet? You think they're going to be nice and cool? You think they're not going to, they're going to stop beheading people or throwing Scud missiles at Israel? I think not. It's not going to go away just because we want to blink it away and be nice and you know, hope that it'll all just turn out better. It won't. That's the nature of you know, this world. So I applaud our soldiers, and I'm sorry it's such a confusing you know, in disheartening situation, that is the world we live in.
Well, I can talk about 10 more minutes. I have to do a driving job at 8 in the morning. So do you guys want to do a wrap-up now?
Oh, yeah. Go for it, Jane.
I'll lead in, and then Tom's made a lot of good contributions tonight, Tom. I included you in the description on our BTR page. I didn't, of course, put your last name. That's personal, but I just mentioned you're an Iraqi veteran. Basically, I guess what I've learned tonight from our multi-level discussion is that, you know, people are seeking leadership in our country. Some people are still seeking it in the form of a great leader who rose up, like Barack Obama, after an 8-year tenure of George Bush, in which a lot of people were disgruntled with how things were handled with foreign and domestic policy. But we have to realize as American that the leadership begins with us, and we're living in fractured times where people are at odds. And as Bernie Sanders said, who I'm not necessarily voting for, but he said the income inequity and despair is still, you know, plaguing us. But there have been inroads made. For example, my son is 17, and he's making $10.50 an hour at McDonald's. And some industries are meeting the mark as far as increasing wages. Like three cities, New York and L.A. are increasing their minimum wage to $15 an hour by 2016. So there is some hope, and I do think that there's quality leadership out there, but we need to come together as Americans and not be so embattled with certain issues. So that's about all I have to say. How about you, John or Tom?
I would say go for it, Tom.
Well, minimum wage is something that is a whole other issue. But I totally love and enjoy anybody who has a job. And I don't like what we have now in America, where we have these stigmas on nick jobs or whatever. You know, it doesn't matter to me. I don't care what you're working, where you're working. If you have a job, I'd love that. And I give you tips, and I appreciate it, you know, because I would not do that job. And, you know, I just love that idea that there's people out there who are just willing to work, and there's people who are out there who are willing to make a living and do that, you know. And whether that's Democrat, Republican, I don't care. I just, you know, I really like that idea. So.
Okay, you've had some really great thoughts tonight. You've brought up stuff that John and I didn't even think about. You know, we're so busy on our own mental track deciding this or that. By the way, Tom, feel free to call back any time, and we have a third host who's on our show Sunday nights. He's a member of the Reno Sparks Democratic Party, and he's a lobbyist. Now, he's not a bad lobbyist. He's lobbyist against Common Core. So he has a lot of good things to say. Sometimes he's a little bit off his rocker, but we put up with him. Right, John?
Oh, yes. That's what makes America great.
Oh, John, we're going to end the show with one of your songs because I preempted your by the way, John's a musician. We play a song at the beginning of each show, but tonight we're doing it at the end because his song was preempted by Bernie Sanders. John, what's your conclusion?
My conclusion is follow the truth wherever it leads you, unless it's into a transgender voting booth.
So it would be more than red, white, and would it be more than red, white, and blue?
Well, let's just put it this way. I think Jared at Subway is going to find out what a foot-long prison sandwich tastes like.
That's terrible. By the way, the Tom Evans from Indiana dropped. And I can breathe a little easier now. He was a great caller, don't you think? He made me think about things that I haven't thought about yet.
He was awesome, and I appreciate it. And we need counterpoint on a lot of this stuff. You know, as someone once told me, if you agree with everything I say, one of us isn't necessary. That's what makes America wonderful and vibrant and exciting. So we need more callers like that.
You said it well. He has experience as a war veteran. He's seen things that we've never seen. We can only speculate about. And the only thing I couldn't really answer him on is, where's the new Barack Obama? So it could be a Cory Booker, or it could be someone else, but we may not see it again in our lifetime.
Well, he's out there somewhere, or she, or shim.
Caitlyn Jenner is the new Hillary. With that, I'm going to play New Way, okay?
All right.
You owe me some CDs. I wanted to take a couple of your songs to the local Christian station. So
yes.
Janessa's going to be sending you my address again.
Nice.
I forgot to mention Jane Hoffman for school board. Please vote September 15th. And I was on TV tonight, and I was on TV yesterday. And the show airs on a week from Saturday.
Nice. Vote for Jane, America. Put your hammer down.
Okay, I'm going to play New Way now. Good night, John. Good night.
Good night. God bless.
Yeah.
good. I don't know what to do with myself.
Well, I would say take that energy and go out in the streets and raise millions of dollars and change the world.
Maybe I'll carry a boombox and play it as I go.
Nice.
And carry on. You guys can make it. Just give me the distribution rights, and I'll distribute it.
Cool. We'll split it 50-50. I don't mind.
You'll get a late life revival, just like Bernie Sanders.
Oh, I'm waiting for a revival.
Amen.
My career.
Okay. Well,
my career ended 10 years ago. Just no one ever told me.
It's okay. Keep trying. And thank you for joining us tonight. We'll see you on Sunday. God bless. Good night.
Bless you. Rock and roll.